Hello everyone, my name is Jeremiah Lloyd. That was quick. I am, a little bit about me, I am a graduate student at Fresno State, or California State University Fresno. Sometimes I get confused as a doctor, as Dr. Lloyd on emails, and my name tag says that I'm an undergrad. Basically what I'm trying to say is my mom's always proud of me. Thank you. But today I will be talking about the influence of bunch rot on fermentation kinetics in Chardonnay and Petit Sirah. A little bit of background, as my colleague Walsh Conmee was talking about. So what we're doing is we're testing this matrix. This is the sensory portion of the matrix. So in 2009 we did Chardonnay, which is a white wine, as I'm sure most of you are familiar with. We did find significant differences at 4% based on a 4% dosage rate to the control. We also did Red Zin, which we did in 8-gallon and 20-gallon replicates, which showed at a higher percentage there was a significant difference from the control. So basically 20% to control and 15% to control, people could tell the difference in the microbial spoilage rates that were dosed. Which is why we increased our rates going forward, even with the whites. So our main objective was to start turning this into a commercialized project. Before this, we inoculated all the grapes. Like, we would collect sound grapes. We put them all in basically like bins and dose them with penicillium, rhizopuff, or Aspergillus niger. And this way, we were going to use field-conditioned grapes. So we hand harvested from four vineyards, sound and clean grapes, and we wanted to determine the differences in the fermentation, see if there was any stuck fermentations due to all of these microbial spoilage organisms taking up nitrogen sources away from the yeast, so they wouldn't be allowed to metabolize the nitrogen and really truck through on their fermentation. We tracked Brix, temperature, VA, gluconic acid, glycerol. Titratable acidity, alcohol pH, and yeast assimilable nitrogen. We also have been evaluating the sensory effects of the microbial spoilage. So materials and methods, what we did was basically commercialized wine. It is a finished wine that we have produced. We cold and heat stabilized the wine, made sure that it was clarified. We put it through a 0.45 micron pad filter. By all means, it is a finished wine. And then we also use the FTIR wine scan, and how that met, and I don't know if anyone is familiar with that, but how that works is that it uses absorbance to and vibration rates to measure certain statistical analysis with wine. We also use the standardized sensory wine glasses, and our statistical analysis has been performed by JASP. So producing the wines, we took in over 10 tons of grapes, and that is a lot. We made roughly around 100 cases of wine, which was a feat in itself. Every day we had at least 10 people helping us throughout the whole day, and trust me, the whole department came together. It was amazing. But what we did was we made roughly 15-gallon batches so that we knew that we were going to end up with at least 12 or 13 gallons of finished wine per each batch. So basically what I'm trying to say is that for every lot we took in, there was 6 different fermentations to look after. We took in 5 different lots, and except for the Petit Sirah, which had 4. So altogether, we did 30 different fermentations. Again, we tried to use the same yeast throughout the whole thing, with the PDM. But we see in this picture right here that your clean grapes are up on top, and then you have your rotten grapes that are on the bottom. And you can just see, wow, I don't want that in my wine. And it's not that it's bad, per se. It's just that it changes the aroma of the wine. It's not necessarily as fruit-forward as the Central Valley would like to produce. It's just a little bit more mushroomy, earthy. It's not that it's bad. It just changes what you want. Again, these are our dosing rates. The Chardonnay is done volume by volume, which is a commercialized way to add for addition rates, and then the Petit Sirah was done by weight. Again, we see the clean juice So what we do with winemaking is you're going to settle your juice out. So you let everything settle, then you rack off the top, and you see your clean juice looks, you know, nice, pristine, golden, like really good juice. And then you see a raw juice, which has the same things done to it, and it's still really cloudy, murky, and, you know, just not as good. You taste it, it's really viscous. I know, I was all about it. In the end points, it tastes kind of like a Sauternes. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Sauternes. They're like a mold-driven botrytis wine. That's kind of what it tastes like, and that's a very acquired taste. It's like blue cheese in wine. So the protocol, basically we went out and we hand sorted everything. We got our clean and rot grapes. We recorded all the weights for everything. I mean, you see those pictures, like, you know, we'd break open clusters, and if they had anything like that inside of them, because they can look good on the outside, but when you break them open, they'll just look all moldy. So we broke open every cluster before we threw it into our little crusher distimmer right here. Again, those are some of the, you know, people helping out. You know, we were just, you know, we wanted to be as sanitary and as clean as possible. So basically, again, this is all just your standard winemaking. So these are our dosing rates. We had two controls for every lot that we took in. We had a 5%, 10%, 15%, and 20%. We acclimate the yeast starter culture, and then we took daily samples until the wine went dry, and then we took samples with every step we took with that, with the addition of SO2 in the form of KMBS, and with the bentonite additions for clarifications. Then we put them in the cold box at 35 degrees for cold stability. And once they were stable, we did a freeze test on them to make sure that they were, and then we put them through a 0.45 micron filter and bottled using synthetic cork as in order to not get cork tink. The Petite Syrah is very similar. As we see with this little graph, we put the grapes clean and rot through the crusher distimmer we had. We used food-grade buckets that were 55 gallons. Again, that's a commercialized thing. We ferment in macro bins all the time for little itty-bitty ferments that we want to, like, you know, sell our pristine wines. So using something that's food-grade to ferment in is not uncommon this plastic and food-grade is not uncommon for the industry. We pressed once the wines went dry as not to use residual sugar, to interfere with our wines. This is the fermentation curve. So what we thought we were going to do is get a lot of like stuck fermentation, especially as the microbial spoilage gets higher. But again, you see throughout all these four lots, it's a very like, you know, steady curve. And the only thing that we did find was that the wines with higher percentages of microbial spoilage, had higher rates of sugar. This could be due to dehydration. All that we know is that if you have higher Brix, or total sugars, your alcohol target could be missed. And so this could in turn be higher tax rates if it goes over like your 14% or your 16% if you're looking at certain stuff. So this could be very expensive to deal with. Then you got to blend it out. You're looking into labor. There's just a lot of things that can go wrong, especially with just like a smidgen off. And when you're looking at like a 600,000 gallon tank, 300,000 gallon tank, or even like a 10,000 gallon tank, it could be very costly to your winery. So, and also the temperatures that we found throughout it were very consistent, but the color, so as we see on the bottom of here, the higher rates you go off, so that's control one, control two, 5%, 10%, 15%, and 20%. As you go up, you see that there's like a little bit more golden, that's like brown. Again, that's very important for the consumer preference. Consumers buy wine based off of color, which is why sometimes we try to hide it in green bottles. I'm just kidding. But people do like to buy things off color. Like, you find really dark reds. That's what you want. You want a nice light straw wine, you know, for easy drinking. Or you want, like, a nice, you know, really heavy dark oaky Chardonnay. Again, if you start off with the control one, you can change that color based off of your oak additions or your oxidation rates. It's just costly and time effective. So the glycerol production in the Chardonnay, we found a correlation that they did increase throughout all of the finished wines with glycerol, and glycerol is a little bit of like the viscosity that's added in your mouthfeel. It's a little bit, not necessarily slimy, but very like thick, and so we saw that as the microbial spoilage rates go up, the levels of glycerol go up. And then that red dot up top is the 100% sample that we had the pleasure of making. So we made 5 gallons of a 100% microbial spoilage wine, and it was not that bad. But we saw that it's not linear by, or not a straight line by any means on your glycerol production in your finished wine. So fermentations with Petit Sirah. Again, this is another total sugar consumption of yeast throughout, so it's a fermentation curve. And again, you see that the 20% has a higher level of total sugars than your two controls. And your alcohol is, again, affected by that. But the wines went dry. This is VA through time, so you start off with your higher rate in the 20%, and it kind of, you know, consumes the VA, blows it off, and then it builds up back again, and then it blows off again, and then in your finished wines, you still see that the 20% has a higher VA than the control. So in the sensory studies that we've been doing, we've been doing AFC tests, which are discrimination tests. So what that means is that we put two of the same wines and then one different wine, and we, you know, ask people to tell the difference between them based off of their olfactory systems. So basically it's tasting the wines. What we found is that from control to control, there's no difference. So that's good. The wines are the same. But we have found from control to 5%, there is over a 50, almost 60% correlation in the fact that people can discriminate the 5% to the control. After that, people can't really tell from 5 to 10, 10 to 15, or 15 to 20. And what that tells us is that after 5%, it becomes a terminal threshold. The preference tests that we have been doing show that, and I know those are very like wide margins of error, but again, this is only for, I think, 30 people that have sampled this, and we're shooting to have over 200 by the end of hopefully the next harvest to be doing these preference tests. But we see that the controls are preferred over your 20%. But the people that like the 20% really like the 20%. And again, these are just pictures of how we've been setting up these tastings. So we have two places that we can conduct these sensory studies, but we prefer to stay in this bottom room, which we usually have 8 people come in throughout the day at certain time points and taste these wines in a controlled temperature place. So takeaways. Fermentation kinetics, what you're going to see is higher alcohols. In your finished wines, you're going to see a higher rate of gluconic acid in the beginning wines, so essentially the juice. And so basically we need to still keep, you know, making the matrix and calibrating all these things so we can actually pinpoint what exactly does what. We did find in the sensory studies that people prefer the controls to the 5%, and everything after that is somewhat moot. And I would like to acknowledge, or we would like to acknowledge, E&J Gallo Winery with Dr. Nick DeKuzlian and Dr. Striegler, Drs. Roy Thornton and Susan Rodriguez, who have been working on this project for countless years, the California Wine Grape Inspection Advisory Board, the Department of Viticulture and Enology, faculty and staff at Fresno State, Fresno State's Viticulture and Vit Club, and student assistants Michael Viano and Jared Beth. So we have 2 minutes for questions. I know that was a lot. Who wants to talk about wine? Yes.
What type of tanks
did you use, and how long did it take to use more bottles? So we used 15-gallon kegs that we, for headspace management, we put argon to make sure that, you know, VA wasn't creeping up on us by any means. And we made sure that they were always filled to at least 75%. The turnaround on the finished wines was roughly about a month and a half. So they were done really, really quickly and put in the bottle very quickly. I'm a former intern for Gallo, so I know how quickly we can make wine and it be finished. More questions? I got 1 minute. 1 minute and then we're all free to go. Or we can go right now. Any more questions? No? All right, cool. I'm glad we had this session. Everyone did so great. I'm going to go eat some blueberries right now. Thank you all for coming.